spirit of fear and mortal pain.
Bring our meeting back to order and ask Mr. Lipton and Mr. Kilgore if they would discuss the corporate income tax with us.
Well, are we finished, Senator Poland, with the severance tax?
Unless you had some...
I was just going to ask him one if I could, and that's that if it was 2% higher, would it still be a fair tax?
Senator Tillian, I think I would have to answer that in the context of two other observations, and I'm not going to draw this out too much. You know, if I said, yes, it would still be fair, then you would say, well, what about another 2%?
No, I've settled
and then,
for
another.
Two more.
The answer really has to be in the context of all of your tax legislation, not one thing by itself. You've got to put it all together.
All right.
And secondly, I would say that if you want to know, as Senator Croft so often asks me, and I find it so difficult to answer, what is the effect going to be on the companies, upon their incentives, upon their attitudes, and so on? The effect often is less in terms of the specific tax rate than their perception of it. If you talk about 12.5%, their perception is, yes, but Alaska's going to the top, but it's, you know, it's within the range of what people are doing. Now, a 20% severance tax rate, you know, gross wellhead value is obviously a terribly onerous thing. Mm-hmm. But why, if it's not 12%, why should 14%? Is that so close to 20% and so far from 12% that it becomes onerous? Well, their perception is, yes, it is terribly onerous, because it's beginning to move outside of the range of all of our other experience. What is Alaska trying to do to us when they move outside of our range? It's difficult to calculate the precise effect, but I would have more confidence in saying that your proposed bill with a 12.5% flat and an economic limit factor applied is well within the range and ought not to inspire tinglings of fear on the part of the industry, even though they would not like to pay higher taxes. But also, I would like to put the whole severance tax in the context of your other taxation also, because this is one of the big arguments of the industry, that don't look at one tax per se, look at the whole package of taxation that they're confronting us with. And that's why I beg your indulgence to speak for 10 minutes on our perception of all the tax bills before you. Not to repeat all the stuff that's been said before. I already feel that you're at the limit of your patience on testimony. Everything that has to be said has been said, and a lot of things that ought not to have been said have been said, and I would like to pick out from our perspective only a handful of items which we feel are not to tell you what the legislative answer is, but the items which we feel the pros and cons which a legislator ought to leave on the balance scale when he makes his decision about these things. And it's just these few things, and I would hope that 10 minutes, and then you can have as much time as you want for questions. I start with the income tax. You know, we've said many years that the income tax, in a sense, is pivotal to the state's taxation of the petroleum industry. It ought to be pivotal because it's a tax based upon profits. It doesn't come off gross. It reflects what actual experience is. It's not geared to DCF calculations that run 8 and 9 years and 10 years in advance. It's based upon actual experience. But it's been defective, and we've gone through the reasons why it's been defective, and that's the reason why you have three bills before you today, presumed to rectify the deficiency in your corporate income tax law. One is, well, before I go to that, there are three bills. Dick has reported, and I have read a great deal of the industry response to the proposed income tax legislation. It seems to me that the industry has never said, in effect, that if you enact any one of these three bills, that we will be paying an inordinate corporate income tax on our Alaskan profitability. Nobody from industry has ever said that. Their criticism really has been twofold. One, if you deviate from the present formula, you expose us to multiple taxation. That is to say, somebody else is taxing us by the formula, you're taxing us differently, so the same income somehow gets taxed in different states. And secondly, if you add up all the taxes we pay, the income tax and the severance tax and the ad valorem taxes, we really are exposed to a very considerable burden of taxation in Alaska already. Don't tax us any higher, even though the income tax by itself is very difficult to quarrel with. Well, I leave the total tax burden for the end of my peroration. On the subject of the multiple tax exposure, I think the industry is correct. If every state, unless every state uses exactly the same formula, then somewhere or other they're taxed more and somewhere or other they're taxed less. The point is the industry is not subject to exactly the same corporate income tax taxation now. And their complaint ought rather to be with those states which tax them too heavily than with proposals in Alaska which will not tax them any more than the statutory 9.4% rate on a level of taxable income which is not higher than they actually earn here in the state of Alaska. Their complaints ought to be with a Wisconsin and a South Carolina that in effect tax them on a hell of a lot of producing income when they don't have any production and they don't have any refineries, but they do market there. And in fact, they have complained bitterly to Wisconsin and to South Carolina and lost both their cases in court. But this is where they were exposed to onerous taxation, much more than they ever earned in those states. They might complain bitterly to the state of California, which has an income tax rate of only 9%, less than Alaska's 9.4%, but which in the way it is applied by virtue of the refining and marketing, probably taxes a lot more income than is actually ever earned in the state of California. So that as far as the multiple taxation is concerned, yes, they are right. Yes, if you move to any one of the three devices and actually get 9.4% of the income earned in Alaska instead of the 2 and 2.25% that you would get if you live with what with the law as it now stands, they would be subject to higher overall nationwide taxation. But I don't think it means in effect that Alaska is, in a sense, taxing more than is coming to it by virtue of the operations in Alaska, nor at a higher rate. And the fact that says that the oil industry, if it pays 9.4% on the profits it earns in Alaska, would be paying what another company in another business would be paying in Alaska, where the apportionment formula works well, or where by direct accounting of an all-Alaskan corporation, even an oil and gas does. I think there's good reason seriously to consider that since the income tax is pivotal to almost everything else and has been deficient, that from through one of the other devices, seriously consider whether this is not the time to make the amendment. I don't want to discuss the pros and cons of the three bills before you. I think Dick has done that several times already before other sessions of this committee and other committees. I would only say that the governor's bill is designed to increase the revenue through the apportionment formula. It probably will do so, and will do so substantially. I think for a lot of technical reasons, it will not throw up quite as much revenue as the Department of Revenue suggests. I think Dick mentioned to you that since it's based upon pre-tax income worldwide of an integrated company, this is changing for reasons which have nothing to do with their profitability, but has to do with their changing tax exposure abroad. Exxon Corporation, between 1975 and 1976, showed a reduction in pre-tax income of, I believe, $2 billion, where their after-tax income went up. So in effect, if you apportion their 76 income, you'd be cutting up $2 billion less of a pie apportioned to the state of Alaska. In other respects, it might work to the state's favor, but there is uncertainty, difficulty, and predictability. The separate accounting has one virtue, and one virtue only, and that is that you identify and tax the income actually made in the state of Alaska. It's got administrative problems, whatever, but it has that one virtue. The net proceeds tax was devised with special virtues of its own at a time when it was not believed in the state of Alaska that you could move to separate taxation or you dare fool around with the apportionment formula. But whatever approach, there remains before you the realization, undisputed anywhere, that your present income tax statute, by virtue of the apportionment formula now being used, will actually throw up as taxable income in the state of Alaska very much less than the income actually generated by the business activities of the industry. Now, the severance tax we've talked about, the other taxation in your panoply of taxation are the ad valorem taxes. You have a multitude of them already, and there are bills proposing to add to them. I think the industry is quite right that a great deal of the burden of Alaskan taxation is the actual ad valorem taxes which are imposed here. Certain of them were imposed by the legislature at a time of acute budgetary crisis in the state of Alaska, and they were imposed by necessity, one, on the only source of taxable income, which was the oil industry, and two, by the only method you could reach them, because in Prudhoe Bay, where future profits are going to arise, there was no production, there were only costs and outlays, so you tax hardware ad valorem, or your tax reserves in the ground. I think that it would be very useful if the legislature, in the review of an income tax amendment and severance tax amendment, would also consider very carefully that the totality of ad valorem taxes, that the treatment of oil industry property for purposes of ad valorem taxation be the same as the treatment of any other corporation's property. That is to say, not necessarily don't put ad valorem taxes on it, but if there's a piece of property which is taxed ad valorem, let it be taxed the same way as any other corporate ownership of property, not selective taxation of property of the oil industry. Either leave it to local, or if you are taxing statewide, do that also. But now I come to the final question, which is the summation of these taxes, the ad valorem taxes as they are, the severance taxes as they are or they are proposed, and the income tax, does this really add up already to a level of taxation on the industry which matches the highest and matches Louisiana and exceeds virtually everybody else? The industry says, as I recall from the testimony, that Alaska is already second only to Louisiana and is ahead of almost everybody else. The Department of Revenue has put in figures which shows that Alaska is only fourth, but may come up to second. I'm not sure that the right question has been asked, and therefore the right answers have been given. If the severance taxation is relatively easy to compare, the ad valorem taxation is much more difficult to compare, and I don't know how California ad valorem taxation, very little of which is statewide, and much of which is local, and some involve taxes imposed per well and so on, whether these have been added up correctly. Leave that aside for the moment. If you take the corporate income tax, the way the question was asked, and therefore the way the industry answered it, I'm not criticizing the industry, the way the question was asked, and therefore the way they answered it, was that if Cook Inlet and Prudhoe are here in Alaska, and you moved the California income tax to Alaska, what would the tax on Cook Inlet and Prudhoe Bay be? You see, which means that they come up in California with the California income tax statute, 9% versus 9.4% in Alaska. California gets slightly less than. Question might be asked this way: if you move Prudhoe Bay and Cook Inlet to California, what would the tax exposure be in California? And I put it to you that for Ohio, it might make very little difference. For Exxon Corporation, it would make a hell of a lot of difference, and for ARCO, it would be devastating, because the three-factor formula applied in California, where a great deal of property exists, not just the Prudhoe Bay property, but the refineries and the marketing, and where the payrolls are so big because more people are employed downstream than upstream, and where the sales are tremendous, not because you sell Prudhoe Bay production, but because you sell so damn gasoline there and everything else. The tax burden in California would be tremendously greater. So I think, in a sense, the industry has given an answer, but perhaps to the wrong question. And since every state, in a way, designs its tax regime appropriate to its own circumstances, California has done it appropriate to its own circumstances. They use a different definition, I believe, of taxable income than you do in Alaska. But they are very content with the three-factor formula. Why the hell shouldn't be? They tax Standard Oil of California on much more income than Standard Oil of California ever generates in California. The three-factor formula works that way. Just as here, you would be taxing much less income than is earned in Alaska. So I think when you assess the burden of taxation, you must realistically say, is it really so onerous here in Alaska, in the light of the circumstances of Alaska, compared to what it would be if this kind of oil were being produced in a Louisiana or being produced in a California? So what I'm saying, in effect, is yes, you must have regard to the total burden of taxation. No, I don't think that the evidence laid before you is as devastating as is suggested, that you're already number two, and pretty soon you'll be number one by a wide margin. I think one has to be very careful about it. But yes, by all means, look at your total tax package, and if, in fact, through a combination of income tax reform and a severance tax amendment, if you're going to do these severally or hopefully as part of an integrated review of taxation, that you be willing to encompass within that review an appreciation of the ad valorem taxation and a reconsideration of whether and to what extent these should be retained, modified, or so on. And as I said before, the extension of ad valorem taxation, if it is not odd hope to the oil industry, but treats oil industry property the same as all other property, I think the oil industry has no complaint about that. But if there is discriminatory ad valorem taxation, then I think you have to add it into your whole package and see what you're doing with a combination of ad valorem taxation only on the oil industry or uniquely for the oil industry, plus severance tax, plus income tax. Now, I guess one way or another, it being Sunday, I was going to get a little bit of a sermon in, but I do feel that since so much time has been spent on the pros and cons and so much has been thrown into the scales of evidence, including what the presumptive rate of return on Prudhoe Bay is going to be, where it gets as high as 19% DCF, I think was one calculation. And I don't know how anybody decides if that's a high or low rate of return. It's presumably a very low rate of return as compared to 25. There are oil companies represented in this room that would be dying for a 19% rate of return on marginal production, but which probably feel very reasonably that a 26% rate of return is terribly deficient on what may be one uniquely successful enterprise. I would hope that in your consideration, this is the least of your thinking, and most of it is directed to this consideration of how the combination of the income tax as the pivot, the severance tax as supplemental for a natural resource exploiting industry, combine and affect your ongoing production in Cook Inlet, your soon-to-be incoming production on Prudhoe Bay, and the incentives for continuing exploration and development in Alaska. And I thank you for your patience.
Are there further questions for Mr. Lipton?
Oh, his sermon covered so much. I like it.
Senator Croft?
In that regard, as far as the income tax question is concerned, isn't it true that only direct accounting, only by the direct accounting approach, can we really address what you said should be a fundamental portion of the income tax question, and that is achieving parity? The other proposals, and I'm a co-sponsor of net proceeds, the other proposals may or may not raise as much taxes, but they don't address the fundamental question of making sure that all corporations in Alaska, oil and otherwise, pay approximately the same rate of corporate taxation.
I think that's right. But they address the problem differently. That is to say, the changing, if you change the definition of taxable income as is suggested by the governor and was proposed by Professor Ziegler, if in a sense you increase the size of the pie and you approve the formula, by approximation you're getting closer to where you want to be. But you don't know, number one, you don't know how close except by estimation, and number two, you go back to the problem of equity. I put it to you that unless something very significant changes in the circumstances of Sohio, Exxon, and ARCO, that under the present law or under the bill proposed by the government, their tax liability in Alaska is going to be very different. Although they share, you know, different proportional to their equities in the production, the tax exposure can be very, very different. We've made estimates, our estimates are unimportant, but unless something very radically happens, there's going to be a difference. Either under the law as it stands, don't change the income tax law, the tax burden per dollar of profitability in Prudhoe Bay is going to be different for ARCO, for Exxon, and for Sohio, and by a wide margin of difference. This ought to be of concern. It's the equity of taxpayers' liability.
Or will it be under direct accounting?
Under direct accounting, their tax liability in the state will be proportional, directly proportional to the profitability. It may not be on Prudhoe Bay alone, because it combines all of their activities. But it will reflect the profitability of ARCO in Prudhoe Bay and in Cook Inlet and some of the liabilities of ARCO in whatever exploration they may do outside. Same thing for Exxon. For Phillips, it'll reflect their profitability in Prudhoe Bay. It will reflect their profitability on Cook Inlet production. It'll reflect their profitability also in some of their processing operations and export operations. It'll reflect, among other things, some of the relatively high bonus bids they pay for acreage up in Prudhoe. So that in a sense it becomes a more direct focus of the company's business activities in Alaska, with due regard for the difficulties in the accounting procedure. But the intention is to do it directly.
One other question. With regard to the difficulties in the accounting procedure, whether we do it through direct accounting or some other method, shouldn't it be of significant interest to us what the profitability of the operations in the state are? Doesn't that of itself, regardless of whether you translate it into tax dollars or not, shouldn't that be of a significant concern to us in any event?
Well, I think it's of enough concern for tax reasons by itself, and I would think that if the legislature goes for any alternative to the present law, or if the legislature stays with the law, even, I would think that it makes sense to mandate upon the Department of Revenue that there shall be an annual estimate by the department of what the producing profitability is in the major operating producing basins of the state, Cook Inlet, Prudhoe Bay, or so on. So at least you have an independent fix upon that. Now, when, I'm sorry, is there anybody here from the Department of Revenue? Because I regret talking in the absence of anybody there, but in the discussion January, was it that long ago that I met with this committee? January, the Commissioner of Revenue said that the administration of the separate accounting was going to be very, very difficult. But he had made estimates of what the profitability of Prudhoe Bay and Cook Inlet were, because he had to say that if you go the amended governor's approach, it was going to come up with the same revenues as if you did direct separate accounting, which implies they do have a process of by which they can assess it. I think he was very honest in reply to discussion to say the way you estimate is one thing as compared or contrasted with a legal obligation actually to calculate the profitability. That is, you have more leeway in making estimates. I think that's very appropriate. But I would say whether you stay with the income tax or whether you move to one of the alternatives, and whatever alternative you move to other than separate accounting, you should have regularly from the Department of Revenue at least their estimate of what the profitability of producing operations are.
Senator Orsini?
Yeah, Milton, you said a couple of times that we ought to tax the oil industry on an income tax the way we tax other businesses. We ought to tax them on ad valorem taxes the way we tax other businesses. Is there an other business equivalent of the severance tax?
Well, all extractive industries, yes.
Yeah,
virtually,
but, yeah.
And almost all mining industries where you are mining a depletable resource. The owner of the resource takes his share in the form of a royalty. The taxing jurisdiction where the resource is being mined, depleted, never to reappear again, has taken its share in the form of a severance tax or a gross production tax. And this has been true for oil, it's true for gas, it's true for coal, it's true for almost all depletable resources.
Yeah, I know that, but is there another business equivalent of that tax? Seems to me maybe one thing we ought to do is just tax, just tax like any other business, and especially oil. I mean, once the oil is out of the ground is still there, mm-hmm. and it doesn't change, and it's still usable for other things.
Well, tax it as any other business, and you need eliminate the severance tax entirely.
Give us a comment on that, as long as Joe has posed the question on how that might affect us today if our grandfather had done it already.
I don't even think the oil industry would seriously suggest that.
But on the other hand, there's also a market value for the value of the oil in the ground and the leases a person holds on oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Well, this is why, in the severance tax, this is why we have discussed so much the idea of the severance tax being a percentage of the wellhead value, the actual value which the producer receives, and what kind of problems arise when you go to cents per barrel. But I think that there is a case. I think there is a case, and it's sanctified. Beatified. At least beatified, if not sanctified. By state taxation, that in the case of depletable resources, where incidentally the industry itself expects rates of returns and profitability, which reflect the fact that they make investments which cannot be made again, and where there are losses and superior profitability, and so on, where there is a case for the form of taxation to be somewhat different than other industries, where in effect you build a factory, you build a second factory, your factory becomes obsolete, you build a third factory, or you expand your warehouse, or whatever the case may be.
What they need is an oil well with an unlimited reserve at the bottom, I suppose.
Well, we used to think we had it in the Middle East, but now we find that not even the Middle East is a bottomless barrel.
Especially not with OPEC governments, huh?
Well, it doesn't make any difference. It's not a bottomless barrel, period.
That's right. Did you want to ask about the ad valorem?
If I may, Madam Chairman, Mr. Lipton, Dick, of course, commented briefly on the ad valorem tax and hardware tax, and you just did also, but there's some questions were have arisen. I'll tell you now that the House has prepared a committee substitute which took out the tax on refineries and on marine transportation. It did do that. It left, and I haven't seen the final copy of that bill either. But
what did it leave in?
My question, Mr. Lipton, has to do with, it's on page 2, and if you have a copy of Senate of House Bill 323. We can give you one. It has to do with the manner of assessment.
Just give me the number of the bill again.
The number of the bill is either House Bill 323 or Senate Bill 237.
237 or 323?
Yes.
I have 323 for me, okay.
Well, I'll find some. Page 2 of 323, it talks about, well, first of all, I'd like to ask my first question for me, Madam Chairman, concerning Section 3, where there was a change in the manner of
pipeline valuation.
Pipeline valuation, yes, sir. It seems to me offhand that by making the amendment which the administration proposes, that seems to be at odds with any depreciation formula that one might be in the pipeline.
Well, you know, this is a it's difficult to predict what the effect of this would be. But it seems to me that you have a commission here in Alaska that's beating its brains out to determine a fair value on the pipeline, the Alaska Pipeline Commission. And it's determined that insofar as its statutes and its jurisdiction permit, that it will insist that tariffs are reasonable relative to the valuation of the pipeline. This can arrive at a valuation of the pipeline. Now, would it make sense to say that for ad valorem tax purposes, you will utilize the same valuation as your Alaska Pipeline Commission uses for the valuation of the pipeline in determining the tariff? There's an anomaly. They're leaning very much to a conservative valuation of the pipeline. Why? Because the more conservative the valuation of the pipeline, the lower the pipeline tariff is going to be. Here the governor is leaning to a very, very liberal valuation of the pipeline because it affects what your ad valorem tax revenues would be. Well, there is not always merit in consistency. But if there is any merit in consistency, I would think that it might not, at least it's worth considering, that if there is a valuation of the pipeline set by the Alaska Pipeline Commission, that this would be the basis of ad valorem taxation as well.
Madam Chairman, could we inject into this, I think George would desire it anyway, into this discussion, in view of Milton's opinion that we should be taxing on the same basis as we do otherwise, other industries and so forth, that our state requires that all other ad valorem taxes be at 100% of whatever the fair market value is as of the time. We're not a 70% or a 30% or any other kind of state, but we, though we don't have an ad valorem tax on anything but the oil industry statewide, we certainly do regulate ad valorem taxes of the lesser taxing authorities.
I think that's very good.
But we require it 100% of market
value. I think that's a very good approach. You could take the position, of course, that since Alyeska is not going to be sold, what is its market value? Well, what is its market value? Its market value is related to what tariffs it's allowed to charge. And if the Alaska Pipeline Commission is able to effectuate a rate of tariffs, then its market value ought to be the capital base upon which the tariffs were set. What else is the market value than that? Look,
that's the point I wanted to make.
It's a it would almost inevitably lead to a lower valuation for ad valorem tax purposes, simply because the purpose and function of the Alaska Pipeline Commission is to so limit the level of rates, and the way you do that is by trying to get a reasonable value. They cannot, by law, come up with an arbitrary value on the Alyeska on taps. They cannot, because the participating companies that have an undivided interest will surely go to court and fight against any unreasonably low valuation placed upon that pipeline that depresses the tariff to unreasonably low levels. But if they come up with a valuation which is either acceptable to the companies or is unacceptable to the companies, but which stands up in your own courts, then I think it's not inappropriate to use that as the basis for ad valorem taxation.
That was my other question, Madam Chairman, that Senator Huber raised, and had to do with other things too, where the governor, as you say, is asking for taxation on full true value and on other matters. So my last question, Madam Chairman, is will Mr. Lipton or Mr. Kilgore be available to discuss to Senate Bill House Bill 248 with us, the Pipeline Commission bill, which we can...
Which is 248?
Well, you don't have it, I don't think so. But we were just saddled with it.
Senator, to give that grantham addition.
It's House Bill 248.
We plan to be here through Tuesday evening, and unfortunately, for reasons of other commitments, we must leave Tuesday evening. But between now and Tuesday evening, we are at your disposal. Any way in which we can be of assistance to the committee, we'd be delighted.
What if we give Mr. Lipton a copy of 248? So that he can look at it, and we plan to take it up tomorrow, and we could get him in on our discussions of it.
Madam Chair, I might know that I also have notes on an hour or so discussion with Mr. Breeze on it, and I can give that to you also.
And now, is the Finance Committee going to be meeting tomorrow or in the afternoon?
Oh, I don't know the afternoon, but we've got an 0800.
Well, what I was wondering about is, and I guess we can find out before the end of the session tomorrow, so that if possible, we could meet at 1:30 instead of 3 o'clock.
I have a 1:30 date.
Oh.
With House Finance.
I think we're stuck with 3, you know. We're
probably stuck with 3 then, for a day or so.
Could we get the staff to come up with another work copy of 103, taking into consideration the comments of Mr. Lipton, eliminating those sections or making those revisions, except for the elimination of the floor? I heard everything you said, but I appreciate it.
Everything except that one.
Get the floor in there.
I'm sorry, Milton. The thing is, the floor is in there, and we're making it less onerous than it now is. I think that better be about as far as we go.
Well, let me ask this question, Senator, so I can finish the bill. That would be to eliminate the index?
No, I wanted to go to the wholesale price display or whatever it is.
And take your chances with the rest of the committee.
To leave that in, to make that change from the present law to the deflator. which I think will be in effect a reduction of the rate of increase.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, the last 3 or 4 years, it certainly would have been a much less of an increase.
Yes.
If we had had that provision than the present law.
Madam Chairman, I can prepare a bill of quick order that for Senator Croft's a motion, including to include all the things that Mr. Lipton said, except for that, and then bring it up before you for your individual vote.
Yeah. We either leave it the way it is, or we take the inflator. So we have that choice.
There'll be three choices, actually, Senator. There'll be a choice of either you take this, you remove the census barrel tax altogether, or two choices, or you take the census barrel tax without a deflator, or keep it with a deflator. So
why don't we find out right here if we've got a consensus of this committee that we want to remove the census per barrel altogether? I think you can get out of that work, because I don't think you've got a consensus of the committee that the majority of this committee wants to remove
the census
per barrel entirely, and that certainly will save you that calculation.
Well, there's not that much work, Senator. We can just bring it in front of you and take one shot with a pencil, we'll take care of it.
You can do the pencil shot now or later. It's that one you're not going to get removed, you know.
So the question is whether or not you want the index.
Whether you want the index or the present law.
The current index or the new index?
The current index or the new index is the only...
Or no index.
Well, I don't think you're going to get rid of no index. I think you're going to look at the current index with...
Senator, I'm not arguing.
No, it's just that you can save yourself some time.
It isn't going to be difficult for them to present it to us, and might as well have a complete...
Well, I sure like to get down to where some of the things that we are leaning too far either direction get weeded out, but I keep seeing the things around here that put taxes on get weeded out, and the things that relieve the oil companies of taxes get left in. Somewhere I keep feeling that each time we churn them a little bit, we're likely to lose a little.
Mr. Erickson?
Did you wish in this redraft to have the comments of Mr. Lipton in relation to the use of West Coast prices netted back for determining the economic limits
taken into account? Well, I have them all.
That in the case of both crude oil and gas, that the valuation of the barrel or the valuation of the MCF, if you use to determine economic limit, shall be the same price as is the basis of taxation.
Yeah, the Signal Hill. Backup, not
no.
The...
No, the no, royalty, no, the same as the royalty or the severance.
The oil and wellhead price in case of gas.
Yeah. The present law, Senator.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah. So that would be two changes.
So. Yeah, well, I'll get together with you. I have them written down.
Well then, Mr. Lipton, if you and Mr. Kilgore could meet with us tomorrow at 3.
3 o'clock, we'll put it.
I understand that there were some technical problems that you had with the direct accounting, and that the bill, as previously submitted, that you have discussed with the staff your concerns about those technical problems with it. Have those, for the most part, been addressed?
Many of them have. We didn't get a redrafting of it until, I think it was Saturday. I've had a chance to go over. Dick has not, but we would like to go over it carefully, and then shall we talk to Greg about that?
Yeah, if you would. Is that all right, Madam Chairman? Dick hasn't had a chance to go over the redraft of direct accounting. They had some technical problems with it before, and they're going to discuss it with the staff again. I'd somewhat like to discuss that as well, the new draft of the direct accounting.
You mean tomorrow, after they've had a chance to...
Yeah.
We could probably talk to you, Greg, by tomorrow morning. We'll talk to Greg about it.
We don't have copies of the redraft either.
Greg, will you make sure that...
Well,
yeah.
It hasn't been introduced yet, by
the
way. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I think we've gotten a lot out of today's work.
Yeah, I'd say today was a good one. Hey, yo-ho, young man, Jensen. Oh, it's part of the song.
I think I'm just going to leave our stuff because we're going to be working on this tomorrow anyway. How are you feeling, John? Good. Really?
That's where they want you.
I don't think so.
Anyway,
I had made up my mind.
Where it's going to cause an actual problem, not in terms of the mechanism, in terms of real structure. Your ELF operates for these low when's it cause a problem? It's when your well productivity starts stopping. You know, you're not getting that much oil, is going to reduce the tax liability. Isn't that right there? It's more a matter of equity than it is a matter of actually driving people to the wall. And another thing, depending upon estimation, but the way things now stand, the floor price is reduced to a very low level for virtually all of the ELF operations.
This is 1976.
You want me to pick between one warehouse and another? No. I don't know. My guess is that because more and more crude,
wholesale price index of crude.
There is that because if Carter and Congress go the excise tax they move up the old and the new oil prices very slowly, set up a third tier of prices for new oil and still to come in. What will happen, of course, is that the uncontrolled, whatever it is, will go up very increasingly in price because the oil price is going to go up. That's triple the price. So I really don't know. My guess is, yes, the WPI will go up.
Yeah,
just keep it that way. Yeah. I know. How do you know?
You know what the problem is? The problem is not Alaska now.
I don't care who else.
of the better care.
The upper tier price.
Well, I know.
At the Wellbeck.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Knowing full well, nobody's gonna get there.
Of course.
Because you can't get a price.
But what about the chance of getting an unregulated price?
This, that gives it to you. That gives it to you.
But he does because nobody's gonna get up to even the upper tier anyway. But is he going to actually play?
No, he's not. I don't know, he's not gonna say speed. I'm not saying a price because it puts him in with a Congress that's gonna worry about what the hell is happening to our gasoline prices all over the West Coast because all of a sudden the weather's up in Alaska. I'm getting put more prices to the law.
Let's get somebody in there that doesn't know what's wrong.
And I said, well.
Well, I think your point that even if you took the limit off, it wasn't gonna sell it that.
You look so anxious. I think it's your story. Stick your neck out when you don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, I understand the business about the free sound. No, she does.
Standard Oil of California, desire of the country, after the Saudi Arabian crude.
On Northland.
On Northland, okay. When SoCal comes along and SoCal says,
no, she said, I love it.
You expect us to pay you an import price of Saudi Arabia.
Oh, jeepers.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, 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 oh.
Why was she asked?
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
But you see, we've got to have a home for it, so what are we going to do? You want to make us give up?
Why shouldn't you make a move in my district?
Yeah.
The only time you make a move for somebody is when they're not there to do it.
That's right, or they've asked you to do something.
I said, let the record show.
Yeah. If we don't buy it, what are we gonna do? Take it to the Gulf Coast?
This one, you need to help, you need a whole money.
We'll split the difference with you.
Nobody needs this help.
We'll split the difference with you. And on top of that, you damn well buy our Saudi Arabian at the US Gulf to put into Ohio refineries. Because why should, we can't push out Saudi Arabian crude. And leave it with the Saudi Arabian government. We can't.